Welcome to episode 4
of Anything Goes. Today we've got a very special guest with us. We've got the boss on, Guy Young. You can tell it's a special guest. We've got the good microphones out. Apparently they've been hidden in the cupboard, have they, Tom? Yeah?
Correct.
Laughing away.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, we've got all the soundproofing, all the lighting, everything's gone through the roof this week, isn't it? The budget must be going up each week.
Yeah, very, very special guest. No, Guy, thanks for coming on.
No choice really, Tom, didn't it? You've been nagging all the time about it.
We have been, we finally got around to doing it, haven't we? Someone come down with the man flu last week, but we'll just get straight into it, shall we? Last weekend had the sevens, pretty positive to get us going into the season.
Yeah, I think it was a great opportunity for obviously some of the new guys to get that Wasps shirt on. Another good experience again for some of the younger guys coming through, but we play some exciting stuff. Obviously, it would have been nice if we could have got gone one step further, really, and got our hands on our trophy. But I think we've done ourselves proud. Pity we've picked up a couple of injuries as well, but that's rugby. But you know, I think it was a good occasion. Two long days, pretty much sitting there. Trying to dodge the cameras when you're trying to eat a pasty on a pipe, pretty much. I didn't want that on camera. But I enjoyed it and I'm really proud of the boys.
Yeah, we talked previously, didn't we, when Dobby was on? And we said about almost using it a bit like momentum. And obviously, I know we didn't win it, but we got to the final and played some really exciting stuff. Do you see it that way as well?
Yeah, I think obviously to see the Wasps supporters, and in fairness, there was a lot of Wasps supporters there, which was great. They were right behind the players. They were all smiling at the end and, you know, sort of appreciative of the efforts the boys had done. But I think last season, obviously, didn't go the way that we would like, pretty much. But what we wanted to start the season on is a positive. And what we want out there, pretty much, is every time we put a Wasps jersey on, whether it's sevens, 15s, A-team, you know, Premiership Cup, Challenge Cup, we want to go up and give a good account of ourselves, and we want the supporters appreciating up there. That we're not going to win every game, obviously, but whenever we put that jersey on, we're going to go up and give a good account of ourselves. And I thought, you know, last week was a good start.
Yeah, definitely. And like Bass, for you, like obviously the wingers get used to having the ball in the hands loads and scoring some tries, and obviously you didn't play it in this week, but you played played in it previously, and you get the ball in your hands, get used to scoring some tries. Does that help for you guys as well?
Definitely. I think after such a long pre-season, like Di said, it's just good to get out there, get the shirt on, and I think the boys really enjoyed it. Obviously having the new kit looks amazing. All the fans have been looking forward to seeing lads in it, and I think they've definitely done us proud. Like you said, obviously we've had Kelly in with us, Kelly Sutherton, all pre-season working on, you know, our speed, our agility, and that's definitely, for me, that transferred over. You saw over the weekends, we had some great scoring, high scoring games.
I thought the wingers looked really sharp, to be honest.
Very, very
really
sharp. Yeah.
Really sharp.
Gabe as well, really.
Yeah, I thought he showed his class as well, to be honest.
No, I think definitely it's a great way for us to start the season, and everything like Di said, and like you've mentioned, that momentum going through. I think it was a great couple of days, and I think the boys, you know, wanted that hit out more than anything after the World Cup pre-season always keeps on going.
Well, I think we did it last week, didn't we? The rest of the squad pretty much had a bit of an hit against Nottingham, and them guys used the sevens. So, you know, hopefully going into these games now, everyone's had that little bit of it out pretty much, and everyone's really looking forward to getting going.
Yeah, you can tell in training we're ready for a game, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, having Nottingham was absolutely great for the lads that weren't playing in the sevens. You know, it got that nice physical edge to it, and
it's a pity we lost already.
training game.
We lost 21-7, I think. But it was great. And as I said, we had some good facets of play going there. You know, as I said, we scored some good tries and got some good defence in as well. And as I said, it was a worthwhile exercise, pretty much. And I think Notts will go well this season as well. But you know, they went away speaking very highly of us as a team, and you know, they sense the difference in levels, which is nice, isn't it? Because when a team comes here, you want them to go away thinking that and talking positive things about us, which they did. So I was really pleased with that.
Definitely.
I know we've both been in the champ. Did you do any training stuff with Premiership teams?
So we went down to Sarries with Bedford, and obviously we were very much part time at that point. So going.
So you lost them.
Well, I think it was still 21-7 there as well, so it must be something about, you know, champ team stepping up when they come. But no, obviously it was it's what you wanted to do. It was a great experience and great to get down there. I think they'd won the league the year previous for the first time, so it was great to get down there. What about you?
No, we didn't do it, but just you play against lads who you kind of aspire to. You want to play in the Prem, don't you? And I know I've been in that position before, and just training against them. I know speaking to the lads after the training, the Nottingham lads, and they loved it and they appreciated having a hit out against us. And you know, like I say, they'll probably go quite well this year, hopefully.
Definitely. Enjoyed Abby's food as well, didn't they?
Exactly.
Very appreciative of that, that's for sure.
I think they were waiting around for dinner as well, weren't they? Breakfast, lunch,
takeaway boxes.
Yeah.
Just going to take it away from Wasps slightly. With the World Cup coming up, just thought we'd bring up a stat. You've been to 3 World Cups of Wales, is that right?
Correct.
And the first one you went to, you were 19.
Yeah. When you boys still walking about in your nappies, I was out there grafting pretty much.
And so does that still stand that you were the youngest?
I think apparently, obviously, it's not something
I can't remember.
Definitely front row.
Yeah,
I think must be front row.
I think it was a youngest front row, obviously, to play for Wales pretty much, but long time ago, pretty much. I'm not sure if it's easier or harder to do it now, pretty much, but being a great occasion, obviously. There's lots of stories going around how it happened, pretty much. I'd only played 15 games first class, pretty much. Just come off losing a final. I played for Swansea, was my first team. We'd lost to Cardiff. Went to Australia, me and my mate Richard Webster, who obviously went on to play for Wales as well many times. Went to Australia to obviously fast track our development, because it was our first season sort of in first class. And I remember after one game, and it was tough rugby out there. Wasn't high quality, but tough. You know, it was a fight every 5 minutes, pretty much. But you know, that was back in the old days, pretty much, when you probably get away with it. You'd only get sent off if you could really punch, because you know, you could hit somebody really hard. As long as they didn't go down, you'd probably get away with it pretty much.
A few red cards then?
I was always captain of the Fair Play Club, to be honest. But we had a phone call. Big Social obviously played really hard in Shaw City, back like grassroots rugby over here, pretty much. And got a phone call to say that somebody's got injured. I think Stuart Emmons got injured. Want to call you up to the World Cup. I thought it was a bit of a one of the lads. So I just refused to go, and then carried on the night. Then they get a phone call from my parents the next morning, say the WRU trying to get hold of me. So then I went to. So obviously it proved to be the case. Went, thought I was going to be holding bags. They were short of somebody to hold bags, and done 2 training sessions and got picked to play against England, which was obviously a pretty easy game. Really. But it all happened pretty quickly. But as I said, probably right place at the right time.
So with Wales, obviously I've seen. I saw on, I think it was Twitter. Is it called the love spoon or the love thing? Is that a recent thing? The youngest player for Wales at the World Cup has to carry around that wooden.
Well, it may have just come
has
in.
Has it just come in?
It just come in, pretty much. I wouldn't have thought. Well, I can't remember carrying anything to be quite honest with you. But as you say, it's probably a stat that sort of hang around for a bit. Yeah. But when you think of it now, obviously there's under 20s.
So, yeah, true. Yeah.
So people are not going to really play first class.
Yeah, till later on.
Till later on, really. You know, so they had to hold me back. I would have played 16, really, but they wouldn't have loved me, really. So obviously 80 was youth then. You play 18, and once you're 18, you're into senior rugby. Yeah. So it's probably hard for somebody to replicate that, pretty much. And playing against. The judge as well, Rendell, who was obviously a bit of a legend at Wasps as well. So, you know, and obviously when I first came here coaching as well, and the legend's in there, and he come and had a chat to me. He still holds it against me, still thinks I poked him in the eyes, but I can't remember doing it. If I did, it was a good shot.
Yeah,
and now the camera angles we've got now, yeah. Got away with it.
Yeah, and you had Chilcott coming on, Gareth Chilcott then, pretty much, coming on, so out the fire into the frying pan. And he said to me, he says it on his speeches now, pretty much, he said, right then, do you want to live up to your nickname? Because I just went over my head. Obviously, Die Young, he was talking about. And he think he expected me to laugh or something, but it was a bit too much for me on the day, really. I just couldn't take it all in.
That's brilliant. So, post 3 World Cups, you ended up going to Leeds first, rugby league?
Well, it wasn't through three World Cups. Obviously, I played when I was 19. I carried on playing union until I was 21. Then I went to league for the challenge. I think you could talk to anybody that went to league, they went for the challenge, which is complete arse, arse dirty stuff, but it pretty much, you only go for the money. Exactly. So I went to league, obviously had an offer that I couldn't turn down at them days, pretty much, because the game was amateur, obviously. Yeah. So I was at Leeds for three seasons, then I went to Salford for four, so I had 7 years in league, and pretty much once union went back to professional, I was on the first bus back home, pretty much.
Had you played much league growing up, or was it just the first time that offer came in and you were like, let's give it a go?
Pretty much that, really. I think, you know, obviously back in the days, pretty much you couldn't really mention league, because once you went, you couldn't come back. It was pretty much signed down, really. I think I'd seen a couple of games, Eddie Waring commentated, yeah, it's an up and under. You know, on floodlight sort of rugby league, but I had no idea about the game, pretty much. And so, you know, it was completely a new game, but as I said, it was, you know, back in them days, pretty much, it was an amateur game, so all I ever wanted to be was like a professional rugby player, pretty much, and never had that, option to do it in union, because it wasn't professional, so going to league seemed to be the next best thing, really.
Cruzy was saying he saw some highlights of a grubber and you gassing on the outside and scoring in the Challenge Cup final.
Yeah, no. I found myself basically watching a Dae Young highlight reel, didn't I?
Well, that wouldn't have been a very long one, then, that's for sure.
No, is it, am I right saying it's a Challenge Cup final?
It wasn't the Cup final, it was the quarter final, and we played Wigan, yeah, Sean Edwards was playing, and a lot of their team, and I think they'd won the Challenge Cup like 4 years on a trot, pretty much, and we beat them. But bit of a funny story before that game as well, because obviously in the cup draws, pretty much it was predetermined how much money the actual you would get for winning games, pretty much. So I think it was only like two rounds in the quarter final, pretty much in the semi final. So they were predetermined how much the money was, and normally you didn't get a real big sort of team in the quarter finals, and we drew Wigan at home, so those were going to be packed to the rafters at the Willows. And I had people like Andy Gregory, old, you know, legend, used to play for Wigan, is at Salford, and he said, right, Dae, because I was captain for Salford, and he said, right, you've got to go see the chairman, we want more money on this, because it's going to be packed. Went to the chairman gave me, said, no chance. Well, you can tell him we're not playing. So I obviously didn't tell him. Get to the ground before the game, sitting in, walking, nobody's changing. You had people like Paul Thorber, if you know league, you'd know these names, you know, real sort of old heads, pretty much. Because Salford tended to buy people when they're just over the hill or not good enough, like me, pretty much. So that's what, you know, was made up of the team, pretty much. So I thought they were joking. He said, better go see the chairman. So I went to see the chairman again, 15 minutes before the game, this was. I said, chairman, you know, they're adamant. Unless there's more money on this game, we're not going out, like, is this a joke, like, type of thing? Chairman said, absolutely not, David, you know, it goes with the swings and roundabouts, you may have, you win some, you lose some. Went back, the boys were not having it. 20 minutes before the game, he comes in, and I remember, like, yesterday, obviously pretty upset about it. He said, right, you got to win, it's £1,000 a win. Well, the boys couldn't get the kit on quick enough, and the chairman was, you saying, when he got, well, we could make it 5,000. They got no chance of winning because we hadn't beaten Wigan forever, like, pretty much, and we went out and won. You know, the chairman had early night that night. He went straight after the game, which was quite funny. But that was, you know, and we went and lost in the semis, and we did the big one and lost in the semis to St Helens. So, you know, that was a real big day at the Willows, really.
You did win one, though, did you? You won a Challenge Cup.
Win a Challenge Cup. We won the league. I think we won the league. We done all right, pretty much. We didn't win any of the big competitions, pretty much. But as I said, I really enjoyed playing the league. I think I had a record at Salford that I think I played something like 150 games on the bounce and never missed a game. Wrecked me for a union when I came back, to be quite honest with you. But I really enjoyed union, and to me, a lot of my thought process has come from my league background, is the way they handle themselves and what's expected of them, pretty much. So, you know, it was a big has played a big part in my philosophy as a coach as well.
And adapting to life up north. Was that quite an easy transformation from Wales? Or?
No chance. Like, when I went to Leeds, as I said, I was the youngest to play pretty much, but I went to Leeds when I was 21. So, as I said, you went to Leeds, you signed high back home pretty much. You went to Leeds, walked in the change room, nobody spoke to me. It was, who's this fella come up, you know, pretty much, because as you can imagine, you know, a lot of them guys have come through the ranks, yeah, and played it all their lives, and then on peanuts,
and then,
you know, I get a big check pretty much, come in, never played a game, so you could understand their, animosity, but, you know, I was trying to make a conversation, they weren't having any of it at all, pretty much, so it was a pretty much standoff situation, pretty much, and then I played the first two games, and pretty much I felt I was playing on my own, really, as in, didn't get much feedback from it, and I think the third game I got sent off, and then pretty much, I think I had a two-game ban, came back, got sent off again. And I think I started to get
the respect
pretty well, because he wasn't going to take. Because they had a big fallacy, like all rugby union players are soft.
Yeah.
You know, rah-rah, they call you pretty much. You know, where's the rah-rah, pretty much. You know, so I think you had to earn your stripes pretty much. And the first couple of games, a big scrap, and it was probably me against three, and the Leeds players didn't, you know, just watched it pretty much. Yeah. But certainly after 6 to 8 weeks, pretty much, not the ideal thing. I got sent off a couple of times, and you know, you'd have to kill somebody to get a 6 week ban up there, pretty much. Like, you know, you get sent off and you get one week ban, pretty much, or 2 week ban. But you had to earn their respect, pretty much. And thankfully, I felt I did that, and then got some good friends there. And like, no different to Union, pretty much. Leeds at the time were a big, huge club, really striving to win things. Big money club, big, huge squad. You know, so I just wasn't playing enough for me, pretty much. I went up there, I think I only played like 11 games the first year, although I was learning the game. The ball is the same shape, and that's where it ends, pretty much. The game is completely different. Salford came in for me, and basically, so, you know, they paid a transfer for me to go there, and I was more or less guaranteed to play every week. So, you know, I went there a couple of seasons, and I was captain for the last two seasons, which is probably a bit of an achievement, because I didn't even know the laws, pretty much, really. So it's a bit of an achievement, but, you know, I enjoyed my league career.
Have you ever played any league, Cruzy, being a Stockport legend?
Yeah, in the areas I was from, I think I just missed out. More towards like the St Helens area is where they play league at like school and stuff like that. It's all Union where I'm from. I'd love to give it a go, but it's too much scrapping, I think.
Mm. Well, it's a pretty simple game, isn't it? You've got the ball, you've got six plays to get down there, and if you don't make it, you've got to give it back to them. Like my first season, it was 5 metres. So you're playing the ball, and the defence is 5 metres from you, and that was just a car crash. Yeah, that was my nose just kept on moving every week, pretty much, going from one side of your face to another. And then, thankfully, the second season it was 10 metres, so, and it's still 10 metres today. So it gives you a little bit more of a chance to cover up, get your wings up, because you certainly props. You're a bit of a yardage machine. You have to try and get going forward, but one low, one high, you know, and I said, getting up trying to play the ball when you can't see because your eyes are watering. Yeah. It's quite tough.
Yeah. And am I right in saying there was a bit of a race to get Thomas Bourne in Wales? Is that right?
We didn't want him born in England. Pretty much. that's as simple as that, pretty much. And unfortunately, we had lots of trouble trying to have one a baby at the start, really. So when April was pregnant, we certainly, you know, we didn't want to move about too much, pretty much. And so, you know, it was obvious, instead of staying up here for a big spell and going back towards the end of the pregnancy, she went back from the word go, pretty much. And we were pretty keen to get Thomas born in Wales, but once you had the one, pretty much the other two, obviously Lewis and Owen, were born in England, you know, which we keep on telling them, pretty much. Thomas keeps on telling them as well.
So
two English boys, which goes down like a lead sandwich in Wales, obviously.
Yeah, does that divide opinion with them as well? Do they say that? fully Welsh.
Oh, yeah, they're Welsh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're fully Welsh. But, you know,
I thought they were supporting England in the Six Nations.
Well, I think it depends who wins, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think they were supporting England because Thomas wasn't playing for Wales, pretty much.
And just going on from you finishing playing and going into coaching, did you find that quite tough, just being on the other side of the table?
Yeah, it you know, I probably did everything that people will tell you not to do. You know, I coached the club that I played at and coached the players that I played with. So I think if you talk to anybody, they tell you that's the worst thing you can do.
Almost coaching your mates.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what happened for the first couple of seasons, really. Like, you know, Danny Barr, our conditioner here, I was coaching him when he was playing, and that was a bit of fun, that was, to be honest with you. But
a lot of red cards.
A lot of red cards. I mean, not a lot of rugby, but a lot of red cards.
A lot of intensity with everything.
Yeah, you know, he was by far the best tackler I've ever seen, and probably the worst defender. Because anybody in front of him was like red rag to the ball. He was just obviously airing up the line, and he was going to smash somebody. And it was either him going knocked out or them getting knocked out. If somebody was going to get stretched off. But as I said, I didn't really want to, you know, I always wanted to be a coach. So my last 5 years as a player, similar to I think you were doing now, Tom, pretty much, I was out coaching. I did all the age grades, pretty much. Everybody loves a volunteer, don't they?
Yeah.
Back there. So I did all the age grades, and all the, you know, Wales under 18s, 19s, 20s. And I was still obviously playing then. And I did a local sort of level one team, like Notts. So I was doing that obviously as well, because they were part-time. And I was going to be... I was going to be sort of player forward coach, and then our coach Rudy Joubert went back to South Africa, got this Africa job, so they wanted me to be head coach, but I didn't really want it, to be honest with him. But after a bit of coaching, pretty much they made it pretty clear to me, listen, we want it to be head coach, you can either step up and we'll support you for a couple of seasons, or, you know, we'll have to bring in somebody and they may want to bring their own forward coach in. So it was a no-win situation, really, as in, you know, at the end of the day, you had to step up whether you didn't want to. Then the first two seasons was tough because we were in a transition, pretty much, you know. So, and then we just obviously got better every year, similar to the Wasp thing. You know, I'm not a quick fix merchant, pretty much. You know, I try and make decisions for the long term, not the short term. Sometimes if you make them too decisions for too far down the road, you don't quite get there, pretty much, because people lose patience. But every season we got better. When I was at the Blues, every season, you know, we were then thereabouts, very similar to what's happened to Wasps, pretty much. And I did 9 seasons there. We won the Amlin and won the ADF, and I think we were runners up in the league 3 times. You got semi final of Europe once, got the quarter final 3 or 4 times. It's never enough in people's eyes, is it? It might be the same similar year, but you know, I enjoy coaching, to be honest with you. Being a director of rugby, you get taken out of it a bit. You know, that's what tends to happen with the job. To me, you go into it because you want to coach. And if you do an half decent job, you end up director of rugby and you're doing less coaching. So it's, you know, you tend to be pulled away from it, but that's just the very nature of it.
So you was DOR of Cardiff when they had the famous drop goal, was it quarter-final?
Yeah, and Martin Williams. It's quite funny, really, because... Negget, as we call him, you know, Paul Scholes, yes. He is, you know, because before every training session, he'd have the ball, and he'd be kicking it, and he always thought he was, you know, guy with loads of skills. As far as a rugby player, he was up there with the best of them, obviously, over 100 caps. And there was 2 guys completely pestering me all year. Tom James was obviously the winger, and Martin Williams obviously as a flank, pretty much, always taking shots at goal and so on. And they were the two that obviously that missed it in the end. But it was a terrible way to lose it. You know, Leicester pretty much on the day were probably the better team. We scored like 2 sort of late tries to get back, and then we had Benny Blair, full back, who didn't miss kicks, and kicked 2 from 2 late tries, 2 touchline conversions, pretty much. We should have had a penalty with a minute to go in injury time, but there was no way the referee was going to give a penalty, so somebody, you know, was going to lose in the last minute on injury time. And then the kicks was a horrible way to lose it, pretty much.
Do you think the kicks is a fair way to go, or would you just how else?
Well, it's fair if you win, isn't it? Yeah, it's really unfair if you don't.
Because someone was saying about bringing in like a super, like the cricket, a super over for rugby. I don't know how you do it, like first point scored or
golden point.
Yeah, golden point.
I think they could do that, but I think you've got to have a. It's going to end up a try, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be a brave ref that's going to give a penalty.
Yeah, true. You're just going to be playing.
Yeah, you're going to be still be playing. You'll be still playing now, pretty much.
That as extra time? Or after extra time?
Yeah,
well, potentially. Well, it was after extra time, see, because it went, the thing was extra time.
Yeah.
Alan Rouland was the referee, and I've seen him since, and he was saying, you know, there was no way I was going to give a penalty to anybody in that last couple of minutes, and, you know, and have something. But, as I say, it's... one of them, pretty much, if it goes for you, you know, and you know, you look at us, you know, we were 90 seconds away from winning the Premiership, weren't we, really? And you know, you talk to Nathan, pretty much, and you know, Nathan felt he was all right, and you'd get 50% of the crowd saying he should be now, apparently 50% of the crowd saying, you know, it was apparently, but you know, quite easily could have given us, pretty much, and we were 90 seconds away from winning it. So I've had a little bit of bad luck as a coach, pretty much, and you know, we could have got our hands on a bit more, really. But you've got to be in there, and you know, at some point, them big games will drop you away, I'm sure.
So we're going to have all the lads practicing conversions just in case it comes round.
I think they've changed it.
Have they changed it?
Yeah, they've changed it. I think you've got to name three kickers, and that day you've got to name, I can't remember, I think you've got to name like three or five kickers. But then it was like sudden death. Like
yeah, it did get quite far down.
All I just remember on the day, pretty much, was we sitting there and he's looking, and all I could hear is Gethin Jenkins being me. I ain't taking one, Dave. No way. I ain't taking one. I don't care. I'm not taking one. I said, Gethin won't come to you. And he was getting further and further away. And every time, right, boy, somebody else has got to go up. I'm not taking one, Dave. I'm not taking one. So he could get up to Gethin Jenkins. Another guy's gone on to 100 caps and be a bit of a legend, but he weren't taking a kick, that's for sure.
It was not drop goals, was it?
No. And it was like one from the left, one from the middle.
Did it move? It
kept on moving right across. But I think the sudden death end was right in front, because Nugget missed one right in front, didn't he, really?
I think it was Jordan Crane.
Jordan Crane. It still wakes me up.
I have nightmares of that celebration as well.
Exactly. And even, to be honest, even the Leicester players got stuck into him about that.
Yeah. Cruzy's done a good celebration, haven't you?
Well, I got stitched up about this. I don't know if I can admit to this, not in front of the boss.
Was it in the final? Or was it when we...
No, it became a thing... What? The dog celebration?
Yeah.
No, it became a habit in my second year of the Championship. We used to score a few driving mauls, obviously latched onto the back of a few of them. Mm. And for some reason, I ended up being called a dog. On one of the TV games.
So, at Cruise Dog.
And so I've ended up doing a try celebration where I crawl along my knees and cock my leg pretending to be a dog.
Mate, I'm happy to do it. You could do any celebration, right? If you score, keep on scoring the try, do whatever.
I don't know if I can hold you to that or not.
Yeah,
but you can bring that one back.
Yeah. The one I ejected, you, and I think Wade, you remember Wade? I said with him and Danny, because obviously they must have been practicing it for a week.
100%.
And my only thing on that was, if I would have been on the other side, I would have just waited for one of them to have the ball, and you had to smash it, was just going to really rightly, pretty much, and looked like they were obviously auditioning for Come Dancing.
I think they brought a dance tutor in, didn't they, to practice it?
Have you seen that? There's a footballer that's got a handshake for every single member of his squad.
Yeah.
That's what they're like, aren't they? Practicing different celebrations every week. But to be fair, if you're practicing a celebration, you've got to be pretty confident you're going to be scoring tries.
Yeah. I think my celebration's pretty good, mate, to be honest, when we score.
Go on.
Well, it's just the same, isn't it? It's no different, is it?
It's a smile.
It's just, I don't do smiles. Mate, the people ask me why I don't smile, because I'm not very good at doing two things at once, pretty much, and the first thing I'm doing once we score is thinking about the next thing.
Yeah.
I'm normally getting into Lee Blackett on the mic, that's what we normally get. It's get thinking about this kick-off now, let's make sure what they're doing. So then we say, why are you smiling? Well, I'm already thinking about the next thing. And I don't understand why people don't know that we know that the camera's going to come on us.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to see if somebody makes a mistake is my head in my hands or jumping up and down like a clown, pretty much, you know. That doesn't mean you're not you know, you're not, your heart's not beating inside type of thing.
I always wondered, is there like a light that lets you know when it's on, when the camera's on, yeah, so like you can be, and then it comes on quickly and you're having to change.
Well, you know exactly, as soon as there's a mistake, you know, one of our players make a mistake or somebody's coming to you straight away, as soon as there's a try is coming to you, if there's any referees issue, is coming to you, you know, some of my language up the side of my mouth to look isn't great, by the way, but and what we, especially at the Rico, when it's on, you can see it on the screen, yeah, as well, so then you've got to pretend like you can't see it, but you can, yeah, see it on the screen.
You see it all the time, right, on TV, you can see people looking up at the screen, like, yeah, am I, yeah, still on? I'm not, yeah, I can't, yeah, tell. I go, good or bad,
go
I
one
tell
of the disguises with the glasses with the fake moustache and see if the camera's still
cut your face off.
Still
so as a coach, going to a coach, is there things that obviously you see in the dressing room now that annoy you, but back when you were a player, obviously you'd have been a part of, or...
No, I'm just a big believer in we're all different, and my big thing as a player, and I would say the same now, prepare on how you want to prepare, but don't disturb anyone else. So it doesn't really matter if you want to run into the wall and bang your head against the wall, or if you want to, you know, like... you know, do some foot movements, or if you want to sit there smoking a fag or whatever you want to do, that's up to you, but as long as you're not affecting anybody else, pretty much. I was never one to get too excited before a game, to be honest. You know, warm-ups, you know, I always used to come in the warm-up more tired than, you know, than at the end of the game. The warm-ups used to kill me, pretty much, but, you know, to me, I was always one that I felt I could, I didn't really need to jump up and down before I could switch on, but everybody's different.
Yeah.
And I get to know, you know, I tend to like sort of sit back, and I don't miss a lot of things, pretty much. I tend to know when people are in the right place and when they're not in the right place, and because you get used to people's mannerisms, you get used to how they walk, how they conduct themselves, how they, you know, how they prepare. And when you see them, you know, big games, we all know what big games are, and sometimes the games that received to win comfortably the worst games really to prepare for, but you tend to recognise that, and you know, to me, that's one of my biggest sort of bugbears, really, is, you know, not players not preparing you know, the way they would prepare for any, you know, a big game, if they feel that it's a game that they perhaps don't need to be in the same zone.
Yeah, on that, because talking on the topic of preparation, we obviously brought Chris in, haven't we, from trying to get a nutrition perspective and trying to make us eat the world, but I suppose it's just about trying to get your preparation as consistent as possible going into a game, isn't it?
Well, he hasn't done me any good, Mick, to be honest. You know, obviously the big thing is my job, isn't it, to try and make sure that you guys go into every game as best prepared as possible, and that's from a rugby coaching point of view, you know, bringing Gleeson on board really to help lead with the attack, because the attack is the hardest job, I think, to be honest with you, because it's evolving every week, you're playing against different defences and you've got to come up with different things, so, you know, it's getting to a point where that's more than a one man job, so that was the thinking, bringing Gleeson and new ideas. You know, lots of rugby league defences coaches that come across, but they score tries in rugby league. So, you know, I really think that was important, pretty much. Obviously, Chris is just another part of that, and making sure that you guys have got the right fuel to play. It's simple as that, isn't it? Like, we all talk about it, and I think he's excellent, pretty much. You know, I think he obviously, a lot of guys... I think I seen what he made Ben Annis eat, I think, in training. It was remarkable, but certainly being talking to Ben then, and he's feeling the best he's ever felt, really. So, and he's a big believer, and he feels that the squad and the players are under-fueling, as in they're not eating enough. Now, that would have, you know, he would have been right up my street if I was a player, to be honest here, because I think I would have given him a run for his money on that. But the reality of it is, that's all about preparation, and if we can... Anything we can do as a management for you guys, you know, when you're out there, you're at the top of your game, you know, that's what we want to do, and he's certainly added to it, I think.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. You did a pre-game thing, did you, before training against...
Yeah, so we all went through what we, you know, he set out plans for everyone, and what he perceived is going to make us, you know, perform best and make sure we're fueled optimally, and for me, obviously, I've worked with Chris before. I think he's really good. He's, like Di said, you don't realise how much you actually need to eat and how much you're burning in these big sessions. And I think that's something all the lads have learned a lot. And he doesn't just, you know, tell you what to do. He helps you, you know, increase your knowledge and make sure you're on board with everything before you put the plan in place.
I think the wives are having a fit, aren't they, thinking we're going to be eating more and more?
Yeah, the food bill's gone through the roof.
Absolutely through the roof.
So well, I think they'd be all right if we win it, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, I think people forget that about rugby, don't they? At the end of the day, we go home and the wives always get a kick in, not literally, obviously, but, you know, as I say, we put so much into it. Things don't go our way when you go home. We're probably not the most pleasant people to be around. So I think they'd be more than happy to make us an extra portion of pasta if it means we're going to win.
Definitely. And shout out to Abby and Simon, obviously, yeah. Do a great job of foods.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Yeah, when I think he's had a bit of a heart attack, the amount of bananas lads are going through at the minute is absolutely astronomical.
Well, he's a bit of a magician, isn't he? You know, how can. It's about 100 people. How come, you know, Abby just conjured up what he does? 100 people, and obviously Simon, he must got asbestos hands pretty much because he's washing the dishes there in red hot water and he just cracks on with it. But and that's what people forget. I think, you know, that everyone sees perhaps things at the top end, but underneath that, there's some guys that really work their socks off. I think obviously people mentioned Pudsey, but there's two there that the place wouldn't be the same without them, would it? You know, let's be honest, it just wouldn't be the same place without Abby and Simon and the likes of Pudsey and all these and Sam Bruce and people don't get mentioned enough, I think.
Definitely.
You know, I think us coaches and, you know, we're in alignment enough, but there's enough, you know, even Chris does a job one day a week, doesn't he, really?
Don't know about Velo, though. Mr. Negative.
Too critical. Maybe he's a fireman, anyway.
I know, he just puts things out.
Does he text you at 10:30 in the night? Normally I get texts at 10:30
in the night. All the time. It's about anything goes, about negative, oh, it's too long, oh, this, that, but, you know. We just do our own thing. We don't listen to him anymore.
I don't get his hours, mate. I think his hours are something like 12 o'clock till 12 o'clock in the night. I think he's on 12-hour shifts. But you know, but I think he's definitely a part-time fireman.
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely. They're the heartbeat of the club, and they all these people. They just keep it ticking and make it easy for us as players to come in. And you know, we want to just get. Obviously, we just want to win at the weekend, and they make all them little things a lot easier.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more than that. You got some questions from.
Oh, yes, I have got some questions. Give me 2 seconds.
Get the fans involved, you know.
No, it's done that thing again.
Well, the three of them.
Lost
yeah, the three listeners. I think my old man had a question. Do your old man have a question as well? That's about it, isn't it, for listeners?
I've lost
Tom Vale, any questions? No? You're still fuming that we're getting stuck into you, aren't you?
I'm sure we're all looking forward to going to the Joss Bassett Arena on a weekend, are we?
Oh, honestly. It's a joke. He's the face of Under Armour. He's the face of Wasps.
Mate, I'm a volunteer for everything, mate. Yeah.
That is nothing to do with me. That's Tom Vale. That's the big Valo.
You're paying someone, mate.
The Joss Bassett Arena.
I've lost. I've prepped it. I'm flustered. I've lost it. We're getting stuck into me about
red, aren't you? I'll go first. I remember one of them. One of them was pretty straightforward with the World Cup coming up. Yeah. Just a prediction from all of us. Someone was after. I suppose the easy thing to say a winner, but there's, yeah.
Well, the top three for me would definitely be South Africa, New Zealand, England.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to come from one of them, I think.
I agree.
Bass? Yeah, I agree. South Africa for me, I think they're going in strong. They're the strong rugby championship. I think they're going to really be the team to beat. Like you said, I think England. I think it's so tight. I think the teams, you know, the Northern Hemisphere teams have all shown glimpses of playing well. It's just. Obviously, on the day, there's a lot of tough groups. So getting out your group and, you know, trying to get a potentially easy quarterfinal.
I think it's so intense as well that teams will pick up injuries inevitably. So if you miss, you know, a key player and you go into the last stages, that'll make a massive difference.
But I think if you look at them three teams, they could probably absorb one or two injuries better than some of the other teams. And I think, as you rightly said, it probably boils down to that. You know, if some of the other teams. Will take some beating, you know. Ireland will take some beating if they keep everybody, but they lose one or two players. Wales will be the same.
Yeah.
They lose one or two of their key players. I haven't quite got the depth where I think New Zealand, South Africa, and England could probably absorb one or two injuries.
Yeah, definitely. I've searched that. I was on the wrong bit, wasn't I? I had it ready. From at Andy Darling 101. Does Does Di plan on writing a book long term about his rugby career and coaching?
Well, I've actually done one book.
He's done one already.
I've already done.
Get to WH Smith Waterstones now. Let's get it up in the charts.
I've done one called The Young One. That was obviously when I was captain of Wales, pretty much. So still playing then. So whether I do a second edition, I don't. Depends how busy April is, to be honest. Because I can't remember, you know, what happened last week when it comes to rugby, pretty much, to be honest. I'm world's worst, and people can tell me, like, do you remember playing that game? No, I don't, pretty much. Do you remember playing against him? No, I don't, pretty much. But April's always kept, cut ins and stuff like that, and she had a load off my parents and so on. So when I did that book, she sat with a guy from Cardiff called Alan Evans, sadly passed away now, but he was, so he wrote The Young One. It was about me starting off playing and going north and why I went north and the experiences in north and obviously coming back and captaining Wales, pretty much. So there's certainly another, another couple
another
of years.
Another few more chapters,
but whether he'd want to reveal that or not, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Because that obviously coaching from Cardiff now through to Wasps, and obviously you've got a long career going forward. You've come across some big players, a lot of different things going on in the background. Do you think there will come a time where you potentially retire, where these are the things that, you know, I know I'd certainly
look
be
back on.
Yeah, I'd certainly be interested in hearing on all this other stuff that goes on that we don't necessarily know that much about, and I think the fans would. Is that something you
Well, I think
about?
To be honest, it's my job to keep that from you, isn't it, really? I think, Wasps has been a journey. Like, it's never a dull day at Wasps, and I think we've all seen that, and even the story that everyone knows about us, you know, obviously moving from Adams Park to the Rico, moving from London to Coventry, and everything that's entailed is a big enough story in itself, but there's been a million or one other little subplots, which, you know, you probably know some of them, but you don't know all of them. But it's my job to keep that away from me. Certainly, from my point of view, I don't see myself doing this job, and I don't mean at Wasps. I mean a DOR or in rugby past 60 type of thing. You know, I think I've probably got one more contract left in me after this, and I think that's enough. You know, it's not a job; it consumes you. It's your lifestyle, pretty much, and I think the time will be right then to spend a bit of time with April. She may not agree with that, to be honest.
She'll send you back out.
She may be trying to get me a job. But I think, you know, if obviously things that we are lucky to experience, some other people don't experience, and they like to know that. So maybe somewhere down the line, but pretty much my focus is just on the Euro now at the minute.
Perfect.
And there was another question, and there was an article released the year we signed Brooksy, about a one-on-one scrummaging session that took place in Young Manors. Did that happen? Or?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Obviously, when you meet players, players don't want to show their hand, pretty much, and I'm sure our players do the same when they come out of contract and so on. Obviously, it's an agent's job to make sure they've got the best offer available, and so players will sit back and meet two or three clubs, and our players are the same. And Brooksy was at Northampton at the time. They don't want to be seen. It's very few places I can sneak in and out of, to be quite honest with you. So not the most daintiest of fellas.
That's where the disguise will come in.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so I said, mate, come. You know, obviously you may as well come to our house, pretty much, because, you know, I've met a number of players at our house, pretty much, because it is easier, because nobody wants to have that, because it doesn't mean they're going to come to you, does it? It means they may stay at their club, but they just don't want that, unless it's fine. So Brooksy came in, I remember him, you ask him now, April being April pretty much makes a big plate of sandwiches. He wasn't sure if it was a test or not. So he wasn't sure if he had to eat the lot or not eat any.
But he failed it.
No, he passed the test. Fair play. I said, you've got to eat them or she'd be upset. And nobody's going to upset her, to be honest. So, you know, I think he ate them, and we ended up talking about scrummaging, and we ended up obviously doing a little bit, really, but nothing too heavy, pretty much, because I only had my slippers on.
Did he go full 21s?
I just had slippers on.
Slippers,
yeah.
And still done it.
Oh yeah, mate. It was pretty easy. Really. It's down to technique, mate. It's not all just strength.
Exactly.
Are we going to move on to some of the sweets?
Yeah, should we go on to the sweets? I think it's a bit unfair because I don't believe these sweets are dyes. I think Valo.
Mate, he did actually go and buy them.
So Tom's gone and got them in his part-time job as being a fireman. He's also a sweet delivery guy.
Oh, he said, you've got to bring it.
We need fuel in, so...
You've got to bring some sweets. And I've got to be honest with you, they're always my go-to jelly babies. So there's nothing wrong with them.
It's a great brand, I must say. Bassett's. I know what you're playing, pulling on my heartstrings here, obviously, but... Should we
dive in?
Let's have a little taste, shall we?
We get into them.
So these are your go-to, these are your favourite?
Oh, yeah, I'd always have jelly babies. I've stopped having them at games, because we used to have them at games, and you can imagine the stick I would get. Pretty much.
It's a great pack, there's a lot of reds in there. Personal favourite reds of mine.
Go on, then, that's...
That's rude, mate. Yeah. You've got to just keep the ones you like.
I know, I hate it.
I'm reds all day, I'll be taking them straight.
I think you've got to try and put them in your mouth as well and see how long you can keep them in your mouth without chewing.
Not a chance.
I've chewed already. I couldn't help it. No.
They're 1,000,000% the best yet.
100,000,000%. I think this is the first time we haven't been stitched up. I think the conspiracy's over against us.
We've had yogurt-covered Skittles.
Yogurt-covered Skittles, which... was an absolute myth. I think they were fake.
Licorice.
Something. And
then Brad didn't bring in his favourite, did he? And he got Pudsey to bring in some jelly snakes for him.
100%.
These are the go-to. You can't beat jelly babies.
A classic. No, some might say.
I like what I've done. Pulled on my heartstrings, like I said. Bassett's make, so that's already put them up a good.
If you ever needed any on match day, they're always underneath the counter with the laptop. It was Luke. I'd banned him for putting anything on top. And we've got a couple of nice supporters, especially when we went in. Every time we go there, obviously at home games, pretty much, when I get to sit in my seat, they put me a little muffin or a little bit of cake or whatever. Now, I don't know if they're taking a mick or being nice, pretty much, type of thing. So you always say nice things, but you've got to move it from there, because the last thing you want on BT Sport
is... Yeah, the camera comes on you.
And they've got all crumbs on everything.
No, definitely. I think what we rate: packaging, flavour,
and
appearance.
Appearance, yeah. I think
packaging 10 out of 10 for me, because it's got my name on it.
Okay.
Flavour, I'll go steady 7. And appearance, yeah, they look appetising, so I'd go 7 as well. To average that out, I'll give it an 8 overall.
8 overall.
Yeah, I don't.
Fair play to you.
I think they're pretty. Like Di said, they're not a bad go-to. Good flavour. It's a premium sweet, I would say.
Do you reckon Dyke could have brought in licorice and you'd have said it was the 100%. Best sweet?
I don't think you've got the guts to say anything. But I've got to be honest, I am amazed how you can sit there and talk for 5 minutes about a pack of sweets. I think that's the worst thing that's come out of this little chat. Spending time talking about a pack of sweets.
This is one of the listener's favourite parts as well, isn't it?
Yeah, my old man loves this bit.
Maybe we're just that bad at talking about rugby. We're going to change it to any sweets goes. Next week. So you've just bottled the ratings of you. Because they're going to be low. They're going to be low. You can't just try and change the subject.
They're a 10.
Just because you're panicking.
They're definitely a 10, mate.
I've been honest. And look at.
Mate, you're usually critical. You're like the Tom Vale of sweet critics. Yeah. Negative and very overcritical, but today you've got positive ones.
We've had a good...
Nothing wrong with them.
No, they're good. I've enjoyed them.
Best sweet we've had yet.
Yeah. You better hurry up, because I'm eating them all as well.
Like Dan Barr with caffeine gums.
Yeah. And the other game we like to play at the end, I don't know if you've been teed up or not, is an either-or game. So basically I'll give you two words, so I'd say like...
I can pass on if it's too difficult, can I?
Well,
I don't mind.
There's not too many hard ones, in there?
No, but it'll only be a quick game. I've only got time to be honest, my brain's fried of it. I can only think of 10 words at the moment. Gone straight to my head. So let's get going then, a game of either or. We'll try and make it as quick fire as possible.
Yeah.
England or Wales?
Wales.
Black or gold?
Gold.
Manchester or Aberdare?
Oh, Aberdare every time. Mate, Aberdare every time. Not even think about it.
Beer or lager?
Lager.
Hot or cold?
Cold.
Forwards or backs?
Forwards.
Scrum or line out?
Scrum.
League or union?
Oh, league.
Shorts or trousers?
Oh, trousers.
Cruz or Bassett?
Neither.
I'm still losing.
We've had three draws, one cruise.
So
I'm fourth. If we get a point each, I'm 4-3 up.
Yeah, basically.
It's difficult. We're going to catch someone out.
Terrible for me.
You're trying to speed up then, thinking you're going to catch me.
I was never going to get you on, let's be honest. Lovely stuff, right?
So thank you again, everyone listening. That's episode 4 done. Thank you very much, Di, for coming in this week. We'd just like to say again, if you could all review us on the podcast app, Spotify, Audio Boom, that'd be great. We've had some great feedback so far. Keep it coming in, keep engaging with us. We're loving loving everything the fans are doing. But again, thank you very much, Di, and that's goodbye from me
and goodbye from me,
and just remember,
Eddie Sting goes.